Reviews. On the air. It's beautiful here in the city of Chicago. It is just so muggy, so humid. We're trying to stay cool any way possible, but it's beautiful. I mean, there's no real complaining about it, but it is so beautiful. It's wonderful. And I hope the George Wilder Jr. Show hopes that it's wonderful and magnificent wherever you are in the world. Really, I do. I really hope everybody is doing beautiful, doing great, doing wonderful. No time to be depressed about the shit that's going on in the world. It's time for people to start feeling good inside of themselves. and just go on about what you do. You go to work, you go to school, you volunteer. I mean, you're just such a great help around in your community, and you're helping others. You know, I mean, hey, wow. I think you're fantastic. I really do. And because that's what I do. That's what my son does, and other people. I think that Claudia, she does the same thing. And
well, who's Claudia?
It's just beautiful in the city of Chicago, and it's been beautiful for the past few days. The weekend was just about the same as today, muggy, but beautiful, you know. You know, it's like one of those, I think I wrote something to this effect. It's like one of those hazy, crazy days of summer. Hazy, crazy, lazy days of summer. That's a song that was recorded way back when by Nat King Cole. And it feels, if you have some time, go look it up. It's on the online somewhere. It's like that, a lazy, crazy, hazy days of summer. And we were out there and we were just emulating the same thing, lazy, crazy, hazy in the summer. It's just beautiful. And I do hope it's nice where you are. I know some places are raining and it's storming, and hang in there. It's going to get beautiful. Just hang in there. Okay. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show. We are starting a new week today. We're on 4 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., sometimes 8 o'clock, depends on what's going on. But most of the time we're on just, that hour and a half, I believe, right? Yeah, okay. Sometimes it may be 2 hours, depends on what's going on. All right, be nice to one another out there. You know, it is so easy to be nice to people. Be nice to people, even if they're assholes, and we got a lot of them. Just be nice to some people. You know, be nice. Be smile. Don't be angry. I mean, if you're angry like they may be angry. I mean, you're just feeding into their egos or whatever. Be nice to people. Be nice to each other out there, okay? Vote blue, all right? We're all going to vote blue. I am not a Democrat, but I do lean that way because I'm sure in the hell is not a Republican. Did you see that monstrosity in London last week, or was it last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was? Did you see Donald Trump? Did you see his ass, pathetic ass, with the Queen? That was just, he went over there and he embarrassed the hell out of the United States. And for anybody who's trying to defend something like that, defend Donald Trump, to say it's not as bad as we see it, they can just, I don't want to use a lot of bad language on the show, but they can just, you know, go straight to hell. You know, because there are some people defending Donald Trump's pathetic behavior in London. The Britons, they had a baby blimp. Everybody in the world has has heard something about, or know pretty damn good about, the baby blimp in London a few days ago. And wow, he is the most pathetic. You know, the Brits, they made it clear that they did not want Donald Trump in their town. They made it so clear with this baby blimp and protests all over the place. Donald Trump saying, well, they don't like me. And then he turns around to say they love me. That is just a pathetic liar. I mean, he is just, they was chanting for him to go back home as if we want him, you know. We don't want that fool. I was looking at some of the reviews that I've gotten on some of the things that I've written over the years, and I see one star for Landlady from Hell. One star, folks. That means that whoever... Well, this is not a review. It's just like a rating. I wonder did the person actually read the book before they decided to give it one star. Anyway, I have to go and try and delete that, because I don't want that one. Oh, I've got a lot of 4 and 5 stars. I got more 4- and 5-star ratings for and reviews for my books than I have 1 star. And I'm just not seeing this. I mean, when you're a writer and you bust your ass doing what you love and you put it out there and somebody goes 1 star, uh-oh, got to do something about this. Because that 1 star can take your whole batch of books, whole batch of writings down. But I've gotten great reviews on a lot of my latest stuff and some of my old stuff. But this is, you know, a lot of times these folks give you these 1-star, 2-star reviews and you don't deserve them. You don't deserve them. It's just that these people are just nasty people. They just mean and nasty people who just go around and giving people 1 stars because they can't stand somebody being creative, someone being creative. So we're going to have to, and a lot of times when I do get 1, 2, 3-star reviews, I'll go back and I'll look over and read over the manuscript. And if I find that their rating or their review is valid, then I'll make a lot of changes. Then I'll resubmit the book, choose a new title for it, and I'll resubmit the book after I do a little bit more editing. You know, but there are times when I have gotten 1 star. And I'll go back to review the book. I'll go back to read the book. And I'll find I'm saying, what's wrong with it? I don't see anything wrong with it. You know. But sometimes getting 1 star can, as a writer, I mean, it can really, really rock your world. It really can. And because you work so hard on something and somebody goes along and says, hey, that ain't shit. You know, so... But this particular book, Landlady from Hell, I think this is an old review from way back when. But still in all, I have to do something about it because this book is not really in circulation anymore. I redone this book. I've re-edited and resubmitted it under a new title. But obviously, the writer got a hold of this one and or not, you know. All right, the George Wilder Jr. Show is on the air. I was talking about, I don't think reviews are necessary to sell your book. I mean, they look good on your Amazon page. They look great, or your Books and Noble page, or your Books and a Million page, wherever you got your book and you've got several reviews. I think they're great. Don't get me wrong. I want every positive review about my work that I can get, but I'm just saying I don't think you actually need to have a review because a lot of people who buy your book, they are not going to review it. There's so many people who read your book and download your book, but they cannot write a review to save their souls. I don't know what's so hard about a 5-star. I like it. I loved it. And that's it. You know, a lot of people will not write a review because some people are not. To write a review on Amazon, I think you have to be Amazon member, and a lot of people aren't members of Amazon, so they can't and will not write a review. You know, either they like the book, oh George, I loved it. Can you write a review? No, I can't. All right, the George Wilder Jr. Show is on the air. These Republicans typically support Trump, and they're talking about Gowdy, Mitchell, Ryan, and Orrin Hatch, powerful lawmakers are backing intelligence agencies. Yeah, Trump doesn't believe. We have 5 or 6 intelligence agencies that's saying that Russians hacked our elections. Russians helped him get elected. Trump will not believe it. Everybody in the intelligence agencies believe it. Everybody, every Democrat believes it because there is mountains and mountains of proof. But Trump will not believe it. He can't believe it. He don't. This man is a traitor. This man is a buffoon, an idiot, a clown. If you saw the performance over in London, I mean, you just know this guy. He embarrassed the United States to its core. I mean, you've got some of the staunchest Republicans coming out and saying Trump is no longer the leader of the free world. He isn't. He kisses Putin's ass. I mean, I'm on CNN here, folks, and I'm seeing all kinds of criticism of Donald Trump, who wants to meet with Putin one-on-one. I think it's happening today or tomorrow. And a lot of us are saying, don't let Trump, do not let Trump meet with Putin one-on-one. A lot of people saying, what is he going to be doing? He's going to be talking about hacking into the midterm elections or kissing Putin. And then Putin, a crook, a dictator, someone who doesn't give a damn about human rights, and Trump looks up to this guy. Trump is mush in Putin's hands. He is mush. Do you have compromising info on Trump? Of course he does. Of course he does. There are so many, many Republicans, even a lot of the asshole Republicans, are saying that they are backing the intelligence agencies who have said that what we've always known about, that Trump won the election with Russian help. Help he asked for. He asked the Russians to hack Hillary's email. It's on video. It's on tape. Him asking straight up, straight out, looking dead into the camera, asking Russia to hack Hillary's emails and saying that they will be rewarded by our press. With his dumb ass. And now they're breaking their asses and saying, well, he didn't mean to say it that way. What he was really trying to say was they're trying to clean it up. But you can't clean it up. It came straight out of his mouth. He asked Russia to hack Hillary's email and make him president. And the minute he said it, they started immediately hacking her emails and hacking into meddling into our elections. There is irredisputable truth on that. And Trump is going, oh, no, it ain't. No. And you got a few of these Republicans. They are really, really upset with Trump. They know he should be removed. Why don't they remove him? They know he is an embarrassment to the United States. They know he's taking down our country piece by piece. They know it, but they will not do anything about it. And people ask, why? Why, George? Why the Republicans will not impeach Trump? Why they will not stop him? Why they will not curtail his power? Why? Because they need Trump. They need Trump to sign into law anything that they put in front of him. They need Trump for their dirty work. They need Trump to help them cut Social Security. They need Trump to help them eliminate Medicare. They need Trump to food stamps, to get rid of food stamps, and every other kind of governmental program there is. Food stamps, rent subsidies, they want to cut it all. And they need Trump to do that. They need Trump because the Republicans right now, they voted on a lot of bills right now that we haven't heard about. Yeah, they've already cut Social Security. They've already cut a lot of social programs, social net programs for people. Now all they have to do is just put it on Donald Trump. He signs it, it's over. It's over. They've already cut a lot of stuff. He just is just not signed into law already. But they don't want to do it now because they know the midterms are coming up. So they're going to wait until after the midterms to try to do this. But a lot of Republicans know that they will not have a job after the midterms. Donald Trump will be checked and balanced if he is still in office during the midterms. I would think that Donald Trump would probably resign. Because if the Democrats take both houses, Donald Trump is weakened. He will be impeached with or without Nancy Pelosi. He will be impeached. Maxine Waters will have access to his finances and his taxes. So with all of that, I'm thinking Donald Trump will probably resign once he sees the blue wave, the swarm of a blue wave coming and knocking his stupid ass over. Okay, here's an opinion. I think I mentioned this, saying that Trump is no longer the leader of the free world. Trump has never been a leader of the free world. Trump has been all about himself and the dollar. The dollar. Making money. Using the White House as his cash cow. Making money. Okay, it says here Trump is no longer the leader of the free world. What else does it say? Let's see. There's a video trying to come up. All right. Trying to get some adjustment here, folks. Since the Second World War, spanning 14 U.S. presidents, Republicans and Democrats, the occupant of the Oval Office has been referred to as the leader of the free world. Of course. Of course. Every president we've had, we always referred that president to the leader of the free world until now. Over his last 18 months in office, Trump has surrendered that mantle without a mandate to do so. Trump's impulse is to echo Russian President Vladimir Putin's taking points and advance his agenda, even as elements of his administration attempts to push back to protect longstanding American interest. Time and time again, the world has witnessed what journalists describes in his book Collusion as Trump weirdly deferral behavior toward Putin, his singular reluctance to criticize, his boundless willingness to appease, and his desire to face time. Of course, I mean, Trump is in love. It's like a love fest. It's like a love story whenever they're together. And Trump looks up to Putin. Trump is a follower. Putin is the leader. Trump follows Putin. And it is no doubt about it. Trump, he is just putty in Putin's hands. Putin is the leader. Trump looks up to Putin. Putin is his hero. It's his hero. And then he comes back here and he cuts Social Security. He cuts Medicare. He cuts everything that you and I enjoy because we hate him. They hate him. Have you ever noticed when he goes to Russia, nobody is protesting him? There's no protest. There's nothing. Because that's Russia. If them asshole tried to protest Trump in Russia, who knows? They could wind up dead. And that's the reason why a lot of them don't protest him. Trump, he admires dictators. He wants to be one of them. He's going to a one-on-one meeting with Putin to learn how to be a dictator, what it takes to be a dictator. And there is no doubt Putin is going to be trying to meddle into the 2018 midterms with Trump's blessing. And we all know it. There should never be a one-on-one with these two crackhead leaders. You don't know what they're discussing. Most of Americans, if not the majority of Americans, do not want Trump to meet alone with Putin. And the only reason why he wants to meet alone with Putin is so they can discuss dirt. Or because if it wasn't dirt, if it was policy, it would be open to reporters, journalists, a meeting that would resonate around the world, but they don't want that. Trump don't he don't want that. He's going to go into a meeting with Putin, and who knows? He just might lick his feet. Literally, lick his feet. Wow. Trump is the dumbest, the most stupidest, the most imbecilic president ever. Ever. And that's not only me saying that. That's the American people saying that. And that's some of the people in his own party. That's the Democrats saying that. And I agree with it, all of it. I mean, if you saw his performance in London, he walked in front of the Queen. He didn't turn back to see if she was okay. He could have stepped on a damn toe, and he wouldn't have cared. The thing about this is that wherever Trump goes in the world to meet leaders, he wants to be out front. He wants to be seen. He wants to take up all of the camera and FaceTime. I remember last year he was talking to a foreign leaders, and he pushed his way to the front of the line. So he and we all said, look at that fool. You know, he pushed his way to the line, front of the line. He did the same thing today. I mean, when you go to London and you meet the Queen, there are certain protocols should be the norm. Bowing, showing respect for the Queen. Trump showed no respect. No respect, no decency, no class, no nothing. Because he has none. Trump would be better off if he was selling watches on Broadway. That's career, not as president of the United States. He's unfit. He's unhinged. He's sick. He's mentally disturbed. He's an embarrassment to the country. He's an embarrassment to the world. Nobody wants him. So they send him back to America. Go home, Trump. Go home. Hey, we don't want him either. Keep him. But that's what they're saying now. It is just one of those crazy things that this guy has time and time again embarrassed, truly embarrassed the United States of America. And I agree with the journalist. He is no longer the leader of the free world. He is a Russian agent, a Russian spy. And his mission is to destroy everything America stands for and to become a dictator. Can throw out all the Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Like I said, folks, it's a great day in the city of Chicago, and I hope it's even better where you are. And it is beautiful. If the weather is great where you are, get out and enjoy it. Take a walk around the. I mean, just enjoy it. I mean, you don't need a lot of money to get out there and enjoy the weather. Get out there and enjoy it. Take a part in it. I mean, meet your neighbors or whatever. All right, thanks. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Hey, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, George.
Andrea.
This is Andrea Redlin.
Wow. Thank you for coming. I mean, thank you for calling. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for doing the show. It is hot and muggy. No problem. It is hot and muggy here. And so I may, you know, I don't know. Anyway. And you are an author.
Yes, as are you.
Yeah, books for middle schoolers?
Yeah, I would say middle schoolers, possibly teens, depending on, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, some of the books deal with a little bit more mature things, but they don't go into explicit detail because I want to keep the books clean, yet, you know, interesting enough for adults, but, you know, clean enough for kids.
Yeah, yeah. So, Andrea Redlin on the George Wilder Jr. Show, give us a little bit of your bio and then tell us about what you do.
Well, I've been writing like regularly since the age of 13. I started in journals. I was 19 when I started writing my first novel. That novel is now over 600 pages. But I refuse to publish it until it's ready because you never want to publish your first book. So I elected to publish my third and fourth books, and I just recently published my fifth.
Wow, congrats. You do a lot of writing, huh? How do you get the time to write so much?
I'm sorry, what?
I said, how do you get the time to always write, to write so much all the time? How do you make time?
Well, part of it is done on my lunch hours at work, and part of it is done by sacrificing all the time I could spend watching Downton Abbey.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I heard there's going to be a movie.
Yes, I just heard that too, like yesterday. I'm so excited.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about your books. Tell us about the content of your books and what's in it, and how does it help middle schoolers and older kids in school? How does it help? How do your books help?
Well, I would have to say my books help. They help to show kids that you can pull inner strength from almost anywhere, but it really helps when you have good friends. And sometimes those friends pop up from unusual places. Sometimes those friends start off as your worst enemies.
Yeah, and you're right, you're right.
Sometimes kids go through bad times and they themselves, they may not become bad, but their behavior changes negatively because they're impacted on their environment. But... Mm. If they're shown enough love and encouragement and support, there is hope. There is hope for people. Yeah. And that's one thing I try to portray in my books, that people can change.
Mm-hmm. Have you yourself dealt with a lot of kids? Have you worked in the educational system or teacher?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Other than being a mom, I haven't worked with a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm. But you do, but you probably look at your own kids and they might relate to other kids, their behaviors, their actions, whatever they do. You use your own kids to help you write the book, or you just.
I kind of draw on personal experiences. Like a lot of my protagonists in my books, they tend to be the outcasts. Because, okay, my book series, which is the Holly Hollow series, is of which I have two books right now, and the third is being written. The protagonists, they live in a small town. Each book takes place in a different era of history. But my protagonists are often the town outcasts. One, because his younger brother died, and he just kind of shut down. And sometimes kids, especially boys, they don't know how to handle emotions very well when they're very young. So it does help to talk out. And the other one, she's not exactly an outcast, but, oh wait, I'm thinking of the wrong book. The one that I'm currently working on, her family is an outcast because her parents work in the death industry.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Kind of an interesting concept. Her family actually has a house in the town graveyard.
So all your books are not based on books for middle schoolers. That's just a separate book.
I have in the Holly Hollow series, two which are published, one unfinished. Those are for middle schoolers. And my other book is a women's humor book.
Okay. So you just kind of dab in it all.
Yeah, I'm kind of unusual among writers. Have you ever heard of a polymath?
No.
Okay, a polymath is someone who has more than one specialty in a given area.
Yeah.
Like most people who are like gifted, it's usually just one thing. Like they're either an artist, they're a writer, they're a musician, just one thing.
Yeah.
I'm all three of those.
Yes, I am too. I'm a musician. I'm a writer. I'm also a radio host. So, said that
you probably know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And because usually, if you have a talent in one area, you also have a talent in another area. It's up to you to find that talent, you know, and enjoy what you do. I write. I love writing. I'm working on five or six stories right now as we speak. and I love it. I love it. It's fun, especially if I can find a good story to tell, you know, even if I make it up. Sometimes I just make all that crap up. But if you read one of my books, make it up. And if I've had people tell me, George, you really did that. No, I did not. That's made up. I didn't do any of that. That's just it just came out of my head. But that's good writing when people think that's your character that you put in a book is actually you. And when you know it's not, you know, and they are I mean, they'll believe it until hell freezes over that it's you. And that everything you say in the book, you've done it. You know. But a lot of the things in my books, I do put a little bit of me in everything that I write. I mean, I don't see no author not doing that, but I don't really, you know, it's not all me. You know, I could dream about something one night and I get up in the middle of the night and go to the computer. Well, type that down.
I carry around a notebook with me constantly because I can't stop. The ideas will not stop. I can't help it.
Yeah, they will come, and I will get up
from
in the
everywhere.
Middle of the night. I get up in the middle of the night, I say, I got to get this down. If I don't, I'm going to forget it. I got it. It's great.
Yep,
I'm going to get
it. Exactly.
Maybe,
I feel your pain.
Yeah, I everybody's asleep, and I'm creeping around at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I say, I got to get this down, you know. And it's true. It's very true. And I just love writing. I love writing. When I write, I'm like you. I do a lot of diverse writing. I may write a romance. I may write something like you on school and teachers. I may write something. I may do a horror book. I may do another love story. You know, I may do a nonfiction. I may write about the President of the United States. You know, I try to be versatile, you know. Versatile in my writing.
That's one of the beauties of being a polymath like you and I. We're a rare breed. We're very versatile. We can translate what we've learned in some things and take it to other things.
Yeah, yeah. And I look at my readers when I do that. I say, well, if you don't like reading about Dracula, maybe you'll love this love story over here. And if you don't like the love story, maybe you can go over here to my nonfiction. I'm talking
there
about the government. You know, if you don't like that, then check out my poems or check out my essays. You know, I try to, you know, so I'm taking up all your time. Do you have?
No, you're excerpt? Fine. You're fine.
Oh, do you have an excerpt that you can read to us?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
This one, let's see. I think everybody should be in for a good laugh. So do you want to hear from my humor book?
Why not? Yeah, why not?
Okay. Let me pull it up here. Actually, it is pulled up. It's just my computer is not cooperating. Hang on a second.
Yeah,
okay,
I know.
Humor,
I know the feeling.
My humor book is called Estrogen at Your Own Risk.
Yeah.
Sort of like Enter at Your Own Risk, but yeah. And it's basically a bunch of stories I've wrote based on my own life, but they're like observances on the perils of womanhood in the 21st century and all the high expectations on us. But chapter one, I'll read an excerpt. It's called Apartment Annoyances, because I lived in an apartment for 16 years. We just bought a house, thankfully, about a year ago, but this is a small part of the crap I had to go through living in an apartment with three people and a very small space. Okay, here we go. I'm kind of a slob by nature, but when you live in a 900 square foot space, it's kind of hard not to be. I went on YouTube recently just to see if anybody else had posted videos of their messy homes. I thought I'd find something akin to Hoarders, or at the very least, someone like me who has a lot of hobbies and no place to store the stuff that accompanies them. What I didn't expect to find were these delusional women with immaculate homes where the only mess is five dirty dishes in the sink and one small grocery bag of not put away canned goods on the kitchen table. They stand there surrounded by pristine tranquility of the kind I could only dream of, saying stuff like, "This is the worst my house has ever looked. It's horrible. What do you think?" Well, let me tell you what I think. First of all, if my house looked that horrible, my husband would think I'd suddenly turned into Linda Cobb, the Queen of Clean. Or perhaps Marie Kondo, the Empress of the Minimalism Movement and the KonMari Method. These anonymous YouTube women with their horrible messes don't have a darn clue what a real mess is. My messes, on the other hand, were created by unlicensed professionals. In my opinion, a lived-in house is the most comfortable. I don't want to live in a magazine photo, afraid to breathe because I might generate dust. Unfortunately, most people these days seem to prefer the perfectly decorated, immaculate home that has no character or insight into the owner's personality. When did we become so afraid of stuff when we spend half of our lives working to buy it? Okay, that's the end of the excerpt. I don't want to take
wow.
up all of your time.
I love the way you just jump in and out of character.
I did take drama in high school.
Yeah, I mean, that was something. Wow, she's jumping in and out of character. That's something, you know.
Thank you.
But that makes you know
what,
when you do that, that makes it so interesting. That makes it really so interesting. And where can we go find your books?
Okay, you can find links to all of my books on my website,
mm-hmm.
which is www.andria.com. And you'll find links to all of them there. Right now, Estrogen at Your Own Risk is available to read for free on www.inkit.com.
Okay,
great. I-N-K-I-T-T. So that one will be free to read for right now. But the other two, the first one is called For Her Courage. That one is on Amazon. or you can find it on www.lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. And the other one in the series called The Ruffian Redeemer, that one is also on Lulu. It just came out in soft cover. And as soon as the Google search enables thingy, I'm not technical, enables it, it will be available probably on the Barnes & Noble website. And the third book in that series, which I'm working on, and the title of that will be The Gravedigger's Daughter.
The Gravedigger's Daughter. I love that title. Wow,
Thank you. It sounds dramatic.
It sounds like it's going to be something good, you know. That's going to keep me reading. I mean, it sounds great.
Do you have the family lives in the graveyard.
Do you have anything on Amazon? A lot of people love to go to Amazon.
Well, so far I've got For Her Courage there. The Ruffian Redeemer has only like just been published, so it's going to take a few weeks to register.
Okay.
But you can find links to any of those books on my website. And I will tell you that my Holly Hollow series books, they can be read in any order.
Wow. Okay.
So each one is a standalone, but if you do read them in order, you'll find a little Easter egg sprinkled here and there.
Sounds great. Andrea Redland on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I wish you a lot of luck. I'm going to send you a link to the show once it's processed so you can take this show and put it on your website. And people can come by your website and listen to you on the show from your website. How's
that? Thank you so much, George. I'm so honored to be on your show. It's been a while since I've done this.
I can tell you were a little bit nervous. Don't worry, I get nervous too. So, it's my show and I've been on it for years, but I still get nervous. And nervousness is something that, Right, you're only human. I was going to say it's just natural. It comes natural to some people, you know. All right, thank you for being on the show and I hope to hear from you again. I mean, once you finish your other book, your next book or whatever, come back on the show and we'll push it.
Thank you so much. I'll remember that. I will. As soon as it's done, I will let you know.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
You too. Goodbye.
Bye. Andrea Redland on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back after this.
We now have evidence that 12 Russian military officers orchestrated computer hacks to try to swing the 2016 election in then-candidate Trump's favor. The accusations are all laid out in stunning detail in a new indictment by special counsel Robert Mueller, and I want to walk you through some of them. First, the indictment says Russians hacked into the email accounts of employees and volunteers working on the Hillary Clinton campaign, like John Podesta. But they also hacked into computer systems belonging to the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC. While there, they stole passwords. They tracked individual keystrokes employees made, even took screenshots of whatever was being viewed on the computer screens. Now, the indictment says the Russians wound up stealing emails, opposition research, and field operation plans for the 2016 election. At least one of the hacking attempts happened the very same day then-candidate Trump said this.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
And because the Russians didn't just go after Clinton and the DNC, we now know they went after everyday Americans as well. According to the indictment, the Russians tried to hack into voting election systems, and in some instances, they were successful. In one state alone, although the state isn't specified, they were able to steal the names, addresses, and driver's license numbers, even partial social security numbers, of at least 500,000 voters. When they were done stealing what they could, the hackers set up fake personas like Guccifer 2.0 and DC Leaks to release the information. How is President Trump responding to the indictment against the Russians? He is not blaming Putin or Russia. He is blaming President Obama and the DNC. He says in an official statement, quote, "These Russian individuals did their work during the Obama years. Why didn't Obama do something about it? Because he thought crooked Hillary Clinton would win. That's why. Had nothing to do with the Trump administration." And this, where is the DNC server? And why didn't the FBI take possession of it? Deep state. Joining us now, the chairman of the DNC, Tom Perez. And of course, Tom, we know you weren't necessarily the DNC chairman at the time
Correct.
This hacking happened, but what is your reaction to the president's statement?
Well, it's breathtaking. You look at the depth and breadth of this indictment, and what you just mentioned on it, not only was this an attack on the DNC, this was an attack on democracy, the attack on state election boards, the efforts to infiltrate secretaries of state databases. This was an attack on our democracy. And this president knew about it before he left for his trip to Europe. And he was still calling it a witch hunt. It's anything but a witch hunt. It's a frontal attack. It's not about Republicans and Democrats. It's about the integrity of our elections. It was an act of war. And you see, as recently as this morning, he's already trumping up more of these conspiracy theories, trying to distract from the matter at hand. And the matter at hand, and his intelligence community has been telling him this for a long time, the matter at hand is that Russia did this in 2016. They're doing it in other countries. They attempted to turn the tide in the French election in 2017. They continue their attempts here. Why? Because the leader of our nation is allowing it. He is Putin's poodle, and he is not going to hold Putin accountable. That's unconscionable. And whether you're a Republican, Democrat, or independent, this is not about partisan politics. This is about the most important thing we do in this country, holding elections. This is our democracy at stake.
And according to this indictment, the hacking began in March of 2016. The DNC learned of it a couple of months later in May. Until now, did you know to what extent hackers had been able to monitor individual computer activity for hours, apparently, down to each keystroke an employee made?
Well, I wasn't here in 2016, but when we learned that there had been this effort to infiltrate, we immediately called in the best and the brightest folks to help us out. Since I've gotten there, we've hired a spectacular chief cyber officer. Cybersecurity is job one at the DNC, and not only at the DNC, but with our partners in the state parties with whom we share our voter file. And the thing that is very clear to me is they succeeded before, they continue to try, they have someone in this president who isn't going to hold them accountable, so why wouldn't you continue to try? You had great success in undermining the democratic process. And so That is what is just so puzzling to me about why he's even meeting with Putin on Monday. When Putin granted asylum to Snowden in 2013, President Obama canceled a meeting that was on the books with Putin. That's what this president should do. And if he's not going to do that, he ought to hand him the indictment. He ought to demand the immediate extradition of these people involved. And let's be clear, the people named in this indictment were not low-level operatives. They are right-hand people to Vladimir Putin. It is impossible.
They are Russian military officials.
We know that.
I want to ask you, though, specifically about what we're learning in the indictment about how they did their hacking and the dissemination of these stolen documents and data. President Trump suggests there was, you know, some nefarious reason the DNC didn't turn over its computer servers after the hacking was discovered. And in fact, in January of 2017, the FBI said the DNC had rebuffed its request to examine computer servers. Have you since then given the FBI or special counsel investigators access?
This today's tweet is rehashing old gruel, more conspiracy theories. The fact of the matter is that we cooperated fully with the FBI. And when then Director Comey went to Congress, he himself said that what he should have done differently was, I think his term was, cast a flare up to the DNC even earlier about what was going on. The DNC cooperated throughout. And again, today's tweet is another effort to distract from the matter at hand. And the matter at hand is that the Russians, they not only hacked the DNC, but they hacked the DCCC. They attempted to infiltrate secretaries of state and boards of elections. They were successful in one state, getting, as you correctly point out, roughly half a million individual names and personal information. And they did this so that they could attempt to swing our election. That is an act of war. And if we had a Democrat in the White House right now, we would have a cabinet that's dealing with this.
Forgive me, I didn't mean to step on you, but I'm short on time.
No.
Has the DNC done everything in its power to make sure this doesn't happen again and to get to the absolute bottom of what happened? Have you turned over the DNC servers?
We have cooperated from day one, and we continue to cooperate. And again, all you need to do is read the testimony of then-Director Comey when he was in front of Congress. This is, again, another red herring. And we continue, again, through our hiring, through our cyber practices, to do everything in our power to prevent it from happening again. But here's the deal. And one of your commentators said this before. When you can do it with impunity, as Russia did, you're going to try to do it again. We filed a civil suit because it was clear to me that we needed to do something to deter future misconduct. This president is not deterring future misconduct. To the contrary, he's aiding and abetting future misconduct. And the reason we filed a civil suit a number of months ago is because, A, we were the victims, and B, I don't want this to ever happen again. This was an assault not simply on the DNC. It was an assault on our democracy. And we're fighting hard to win elections, and we're fighting hard to win elections because this is about more than fighting for good jobs, which we're doing, fighting for health care, which we're doing, fighting for women's reproductive health, fighting for immigrant rights. It's about fighting for our democracy, and he's putting our democracy at risk.
Tom Paris, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate you joining us this weekend.
My pleasure.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who never crawls. Heaven help us all. lay me down before I go to sleep. In a troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.